Welcome to Money Matters with certified financial planner Dave Pezzo. Money Matters is brought to you by Pezzo Financial Consultants. Their team of certified financial planners have been educating their clients to build confidence and find peace with their money for over 35 years. Also by Michelle Oliver of Finance of America Mortgage, lending products for all the stages of your financial life. By HH and Associates Accounting, we aren't just accountants, we provide solutions. By Mountain West Bank, your community bank, with 8 branches in the Treasure Valley. Now, here's Dave Pezzo on KIDO Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Money Matters. My name is Jennifer Stone and I'm filling in for Dave Pezzo today. He's actually at a conference. It sounds like it should be a great one to come back with some information. He gets to meet with a lot of different money managers and actually spend a good like 10, 15 minutes in just kind of like, I guess, almost financial speed dating, I guess. Not sure how it's going to work, but it should be great. So today, Tom was not able to join me, so I kind of got a different format going on. I have a couple of experts in real estate since it is such a hot topic. Every list you look on, Boise is in one of the top places to live. Meridian's one of the top growing cities. So we've got a lot of growth going on and a lot of questions on exactly why. So what I did today, brought in two folks. One is a realtor and one is a senior loan officer. Actually, Michelle Oliver, who's one of our sponsors, and Debbie Wickham. Debbie is with Boise Premier Real Estate. And Michelle Oliver is with Finance of America Mortgage. What I'm going to do first is let them take a minute to introduce themselves. And also, I have another gal in the office on the station with me, Erica. She's actually one of our new advisors. So she's going to ask some questions as we go to and introduce herself a little bit later. But for now, I do want to take a moment and say we do want phone calls. It is a live show. So if you have questions for these two, three ladies, please give us a call. Phone number is 580-KIDO or 580-5436. You can also email me at jstone@petsofinancial.net. So first, Debbie, please tell us a little bit about you and how you became a realtor.
Good morning and thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I have been a licensed real estate agent for 22 years and I am with Boise Premier. And prior to that, I had escrow closing background. And I actually come from a long line of real estate people in my family. My mother-in-law started Wickham Realtors in 1968. My husband is a retired real estate broker. We've been married for 36 years. My children are in real estate, my sister-in-law, my brother-in-law. So it's a long history of real estate in our family.
Great. How about you, Michelle?
Well, I want to say thank you, and thank you for having me.
Of course.
I've been in the business 27 years. I started as a receptionist when I was in college at the University of Washington, and I just worked my way up from being a receptionist through the operations side, and then about 15 years ago went to the sales side.
Wonderful.
Of origination.
I always love to hear when people actually start at the ground level and work their way up, right? And they're in the roots of it when it starts out. It's always great.
Yeah, it gives you a lot of perspective.
Oh, yes, it does, from different views. So Boise's market, every client I meet with says, should I be selling? Should I be buying? I'm scared to sell. I'm scared to buy. Is it a bubble? Are we back where we were? People say I should sell my house and live in a rental for 2 years because we know the crash is coming. So you're the experts. Give me some guidance.
Well, I don't think it's a bubble. I think we're still in just recovery mode. The sales statistics are showing that sold properties are down in Ada County and Canyon County right now, but that's due to a huge buyer demand and low inventory levels. So there's only a 2-month supply of inventory in Ada County and a 1.9 month supply of inventory in Canyon County. So the good news is to the sellers out there who should be delighted with the market is median sales prices are up in Ada County 5.6%. The median sales price for Canyon County is up 12.9%, which is a record. So there just aren't enough homes on the market. So if you're looking to sell, it's a great time.
Wonderful. So how about on the loan side? Is it easier, harder? What are you feeling on that? Are you getting more loans to say there's more buyers? How's that
Well, there are a lot of buyers, but they don't have, there's not a lot of properties for them to buy. So
it's hard to say, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's pretty much you're just going at normal pace. Is it a little increased for you? Are you busier than you were, say, a year ago?
No, I think last year I was busier than I am this year, and I do think it's because of inventory. But with that said, there are a lot of great programs where, you know, people can get into loans, and I think that mark or that our industry is loosening up a little bit.
Is it? Mm-hmm. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's a good thing.
Okay.
I don't think we're going to go back to the no income, no asset type loans.
Good.
Yes.
Or the stated income loans.
Right.
But it is loosening, I do believe.
Good. I think that's okay thing.
I do too.
Everywhere you look, there's houses for sale. I was driving through a neighborhood the other day, and it said, house coming. Drove through the next day, and it said, pending.
Mm-hmm.
It was that quick. It was almost like, and they're not low-level homes. It's not like in the median range. Right. There's a higher level as well. So what level of homes do you think are selling the quickest right now? That middle range? Or?
Absolutely. 160 to 250, they just are gone. And then even up to 400,000 to 500,000, they're still selling very quickly. And that depends upon neighborhood or location around the valley.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just an incredibly fast-moving market right now. And I had a listing over on the bench over near Overland, and that was about 8 days ago. We put it on the market just a bit above what my comps would even show that property value to be. And within 24 hours, we had 7 offers, very clean offers, all above asking price, buyer loan approvals. Every agent had done a super job of presenting those offers to my seller. And we could only choose one. So there were like 6, and my phone was still ringing, you know, with more offers coming. You know, those clients were writing letters of, you know, their family stories, and their children are choosing their bedrooms. And, you know, it's just really sad to think that at least 6 people walked away without a house.
Wow.
Who are out there who need a house.
Right.
So that's what's going on in the market. It is fast. Buyers need to be extra prepared and well qualified. First step, you know, get to your loan officer and get loan approved.
Are there even houses on the market under 200,000 in Boise?
A few.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's got to be difficult. I mean,
it
don't
is, and it's
canyon.
Getting more difficult.
Yeah.
It's getting more difficult because the ones that are selling right now, that if you price something at 195 and you end up selling it for 205, you just changed the comps in the neighborhood. And so that is going to keep that median price just pushing up. So there will be fewer and fewer of lower price point homes.
So when the prices are increasing like that from the financing side, how do the appraisals, how do you work on that? If the appraisals don't come in, then they have to either come up with cash, or does an appraiser look at it and say, well, this must be what it's worth since that's what they're willing to offer?
No, it's based on the comps and the sales in the neighborhood. So, and we are seeing on occasion appraisals come in low, which literally stops the process. And the buyer has to decide how they want to proceed. Do you want to pay for more than the house is appraising for?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really a choice that the buyer and seller have to negotiate together, but we are seeing it.
Yeah, that's the hard part. When you look at the different places and areas to be in, mm-hmm. and you think, well, I really love this home, and then you don't have the cash to get in it. First time home buyers, I think it's got to be a struggle.
It is, and it's very emotional purchase.
Oh, I bet. Because it's first thing, it's supposed to be exciting, it's supposed to be fun, and it becomes extremely stressful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Especially with low inventory. They're constantly making offers that maybe are being declined.
Right.
So.
All right. We're going to go to the phones real quick. Morning, Jim.
Morning, Jennifer. How's it going?
I am good. How are you?
Remember me?
I absolutely do. Thank you for being our call. We were hoping you'd call.
Well, I guess we're not talking stocks this time. We're talking houses.
You got it.
Real estate.
Yep.
Well, okay, now, we've all heard the term house flipping, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, to me, they're like day traders. I mean, I guess a lot of people go around looking for a quick buck by buying something and then selling it, you know. Now, to me, a house is to live in, is to be lived in. in the best of all possible worlds, somebody that lives in a house and wants to sell it to somebody else that wants to live in the house. Now, across the street from me, there's a young couple that sadly recently got divorced, and they're selling their house. Well, they didn't sell it to somebody that's, you know, going to live in the house. They sold it to one of those people. Now, on the flip side, I guess a lot of houses need to be conditioned in order to sell, you know.
Right, right.
I mean, that's like mine. I mean, I've been here 30 years and kind of let it run down. So, you know, it'd be like to buy it as is. So these people come in, I guess, and condition it to a better condition in order to sell. I guess that's the possible aspect of it.
It is.
But the fact is, you know, if somebody just coming in, and I mean, I would think that, you know, as an investment, that would jack up the, you know, that's mainly what jacks up the house prices.
Good morning, Jim. This is Debbie. Hey, you're right. There are investors out there who are looking for well-priced properties, and they do come in and they make improvements and they increase the value of that property, and they do turn around and flip them. So I think I'm seeing a lot less of that right now than we used to when the prices were much lower and there was a glut of those homes that needed to be improved that had been deserted or walked away from during the crash of the market. So you are right. There is some house flipping still going on out there. So are you saying that perhaps you're concerned that you now have a rental property nearby you?
Not really. You know, what's interesting is, I mean, when something like this happens, I mean, my value goes up. I don't know if somebody were going to buy my house if the actual value of my house is that much. Because, like I say, it needs improvement and this, that, and the other. But the value, you know, tax-wise, goes up because of the houses in the locality.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're
but
exactly right.
Like
yeah.
I say, I guess there's a positive and a downside. I mean, you know, could I sell my house right now to somebody else who actually wanted to live in it? You know, and
right.
But maybe there's a good part if they go in and then they, you know, make all the corrections. But it's just like it goes. There's the middleman. It goes through them, and then it gets to the people who actually need the house and want to live
right.
in it.
Right, and you're right. If a first-time homebuyer has the assets and ability to pay for those improvements needed themselves, then they would build the equity. But if they don't and they need a home that's improved so that they don't have the cash out of pocket to spend, then it's an opportunity for them to buy a well-updated home at a price they can afford.
Well, say, you know, the another downside is, for instance, you got a house that's in really good condition, okay, rather than putting it on the market and selling to somebody who wants to live there, they want the quick cash. So they'll sell to those kinds of people, you know,
yes.
And that to me is the bad thing because,
right.
you know, you want affordable housing for people who want to actually live in the
right.
house.
And I hear you, but, you know, investors are not a protected class and we have to sell to them. So,
yeah, I know.
You know, it's the way the cards land sometimes. So.
And, you know, Jim, I kind of have to agree a little bit on this with Debbie, too. That a lot of first-time home buyers on the starter end, they don't have the ability to fix the home up, so they have to buy it as is and work on it as they go. And sometimes those people that buy them as flips can come in and make it a very nicely updated home, and the client can actually buy the home and finance it and be done and not have to figure out a way to pay for the repairs as they go. So it
yeah.
can be, I mean, I get that it brings up everybody else's property values as well, and maybe that's false. But it's still a good way, I think, to let people get into an updated home instead of trying to scramble together cash to fix things as they go.
Yeah, I guess it's the, you know.
Yeah, there's anyway. Good and bad with everything, right?
Anyway, I hope you all get a lot of calls today.
Thank you, Jim.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, we are going to take our first break. And when we get back, we're actually going to talk a little bit more about how we begin the process of buying a home. So please give us calls at 580-KIDO, 580-5436.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KITO. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo, KITO.
Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. My name is Jennifer Stone. I'm filling in for Dave Petzo today. I have a group full of professionals joining me. What we're talking about is real estate. I have Michelle Oliver from Finance of America Mortgage and Debbie Wickham from Boise Premier Real Estate, and they're helping us understand the market. And also I have Erica sitting over here, and she's going to be chiming in at some point, too, with a few questions. So when we were talking about a little bit about the current real estate environment, but what I want to know now is what comes first? It's kind of like what came first, the chicken or the egg, you know, that whole story. Do you go in and qualify for a mortgage, or do you find a realtor and start looking at homes first? What is step number one?
In my opinion, step number one is to get pre-approved. There's so much involved in the process, and you certainly don't want to go out and find a home that you love with and then meet with me or your mortgage banker and find out you don't even qualify for that house. So that's step number one, get qualified. Determine what your credit looks like. Determine if the home that you're looking at, that payment you can afford with your current liabilities. So that's step number one.
So what is it? What does that process look like? How long does it take to pre-qualify? My understanding, it's fairly easy to do.
It is. So there's multiple ways. You can call your mortgage banker, you can apply online, but for me to be able to look at an application and determine based on what you tell me whether you qualify literally takes me 20 minutes. Then we request the income and asset documents to back up what you've told me. And if everything looks great, then we tell you how much house you qualify for based on your current liabilities, based on the current interest rate, based on how much down payment you have, or maybe you don't have down payment and you need some assistance that way. Okay. So I take into consideration all of those things in determining how much house you qualify for.
And then when you go in and you find a realtor to work with, you can actually have that letter. So when you try to get in on all those offers that may be happening, you are pre-approved with a signed document that says, I can pay for this house.
Absolutely.
And that kind of gives you an edge, I would think.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, we always, it would be almost negligent not to have your loan approval letter in this market for a buyer, because the stronger your position is and the stronger that your proof of qualifications, your earnest money, all of those things are critical right now. So definitely meet with your lender first. I agree.
What is the difference? I mean, there's different places to go get loans. You can go to a bank, you can go to a credit union, you can go to a mortgage company. What is the difference? I mean, I don't understand why one would be better than the other since they all offer very similar products. Mm-hmm. What is the difference?
In my opinion, the difference is going to be who you're working with, because there are so many different loan products out there. Most institutions that are doing mortgages offer all of them. So you want to make sure who you're working with is going to put you in the right product for you. But a bank and a credit union and a mortgage company, yes, there's significant differences, especially with respect to depository type things. But with mortgages, we all offer a lot of the same products.
So do mortgage companies keep and service the product, or do they tend to sell them more?
They tend to sell them more, but they can service them because there's a lot of revenue in servicing. Some banks will do mortgages, but they won't service at all. So it really just depends on the platform of that financial institution.
So my understanding, credit unions don't tend to sell them, though. They keep them, usually. Is that correct?
That is correct. Credit unions will normally keep, like, your Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac conventional products, but will sell the government products.
Okay. Okay.
Like FHA, VA, rural development.
Okay. And all of them can do every type of product, pretty much, like the VA, FHA, all of that. Is that correct?
That is correct. Okay. With Idaho Housing, which is our state bond program, those institutions do need to get approved with Idaho Housing. Everything else, yes.
So do you think qualifications are still as hard as they were for a while? I mean, it used to be that people couldn't get loans. We find this still very funny that people that have the assets to pay cash for a house are expected to provide more documentation than a new employee at Micron that could lose their job at any time. It's like if they have income, like W-2, yeah, you're good. But if you have assets to pay for a house, you need your firstborn child and all these different things to buy a house. Why are they so much that way?
Well, I think theoretically they think that the W-2 income employee will have a steady paycheck. There are programs for people who have assets and derive an income from those assets. It's called an asset dissipation product, where we dissipate those. Let's say they have a couple $1 million and their payment's going to be $2,000 a month. We'll take that $2,000 a month and divide it over 30 years for that $2 million.
Okay.
So there's a product out there for them. But
do you like income?
They do. They
yeah.
do. And
yeah.
and the all the approvals are automated to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So, or we call it DU, Desktop Underwriter Underwriting. They do like W-2 income.
Yeah, we found
approvals.
That. Yeah, all of our clients will call and say, hey, I need to qualify for a mortgage and can't because I don't have income. So I always wondered why that was so much, you know, because I always think, well, if that new employee loses their job, they're done.
Right.
These people can keep making payments because they have the assets.
Exactly.
So it
but,
just seemed yeah, kind of backwards to me. But,
yeah.
Anyway.
But there's a prime example of why it is so important to choose your lender and make sure your lender is – knows what they're doing, because there are products out there for the people that, like you've just described.
Good, good. All right, we're going to take another break. When we get back, we're going to talk more about real estate. Please give us a call, 580-5436 or 580-KIDO. Thanks.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo, KIDO.
Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. My name is Jennifer Stone, and I am filling in for Dave Petzo this morning. Joining me today are a couple of real estate experts. We have Michelle Oliver from Finance of America Mortgage and Debbie Wickham from Boise Premier Real Estate. We are talking about how to qualify and buy property in today's market. So we're going to go right to the phones. Anne?
Yeah, hi.
Hi there. Hey, how are you?
Thanks for taking my call. Good, thank you.
Good.
I have a question about our daughter is her and her boyfriend are talking about buying a home later this year. And and plus, you know, getting married afterwards. They want to buy the home first. Now, what's your advice on that?
Michelle? So what do you want to know? Should they buy a home before they get married?
Do you think, don't you think it'd be a little, a lot more paperwork? Like, okay, say they bought a home. Don't really know how to explain it. I'm trying to discourage her. I'm saying get married first.
And then buy a home.
And then buy the home because how do people do that? You know, when you buy, I know people do. They buy homes together. And is it more complicated, I guess, that way?
I always worry from a perspective of if something goes wrong. But I'm going to let Michelle answer that.
Right. Hi, Anne. They actually can buy a house without being married. And with respect to the financing piece, it will have no impact at all. There may be other issues or legal issues that they may be concerned about from a financing perspective. It's okay. It happens all the time, actually.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought it might be a little bit more difficult getting into one versus, you know, just living together rather than being married first. But, you know.
No,
okay, well,
it's a great
you.
Question, but no, they can do it, and they do not have to be married, and it does not create any more complexity with respect to the transaction.
I didn't know that great. Either, Anne. Very good question. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You bet. Again, we appreciate the calls. Please keep calling. Phone number is 580-KIDO or 580-5436. And I'm going to take a minute and introduce Erica. She actually joined our office at Petzo Financial in April. She is a CFP already, which was great for us. Her husband was, I guess, recruited here.
Yeah.
Is that a good way to put it?
Yep.
Right. So he is a Micron guy. So she is going to be buying a home here hopefully soon and had a question, which was really good, that she wanted to ask Michelle.
Yeah, Michelle. So I was just listening to you talk about the pre-approval process. And just wondering, once you get pre-approved for that loan, how long does that last and how long can you lock in that interest rate for? So I know that Debbie was talking about how the inventory is short. I'm just wondering, so if you're out there looking for a house, you already have been pre-approved. If you don't find a house for another 8 months, does that pre-approval still work?
So each institution is different. Some have to pull credit every 30 days, some have to pull credit every 90 days, and some have to pull credit every 120 days. Those are the times when we would update the approval process.
Okay.
With respect to rate is tied to property, not people. So if I pre-qualify you today at 3.875 on a 30-year fixed rate loan, and 8 months from now the market's at 4.25, and that's when you find a house, that's the rate you're going to get is that market's.
Okay.
Know, the rate at that market, that market's rate.
Very good. Yeah, I was wondering about that too, because used to be even on a, I remember doing a loan not that long ago, and they actually made us pay to lock in the loan for 30 days. So it was, I was a little surprised by that. So anyways, all right, very good. We're going to go to the phones again. Richard?
Yes.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I have a question about property taxes. It seems they just came out for next year. I understand that there's, in addition to the homeowner's exemption for approximately $100,000 or whatever, is there additional or different for those homeowners that are 65 and older?
Hi, Richard. This is Debbie. You know, there are circuit breaker programs out there for certain people. I know my mother qualified for that when she was a widow. So I don't know the exact parameters, but if you go to the Ada County Assessor's website, and actually I have some links on my webpage at wickhamrealtors.com that will take you right into the assessor, into property taxes, and you could jump on there and see. But if you own and occupy one home in Idaho, you are entitled to the homeowner's exemption, and the maximum this year is $100,000. So are you entitled to that?
Yes.
Okay. So there may be additional things, yes. And if you go to that website, you can hop on there and see if you meet any of that additional criteria.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Awesome. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we do have another call from a client that's or a potential, I always say client. Anyways, a caller that's looking for being a first-time home buyer and building credit. So we'll take their call when we get back, but right now we need to take a break. So please call us at 580-KIDO, 580-5436.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo, KIDO.
Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone filling in for Dave Petzo this morning. Again, I have a studio full of very qualified people on real estate. So please, if you have questions, give us a call at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Again, it's Michelle Oliver with, I always got to look at the name because it's a little bit hard for me to remember for some reason, Finance of America Mortgage. And Debbie Wickham with Boise Premier Real Estate. So we're going to go right to the phones. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi there. Who am I talking to?
My name is Tony.
Hi, Tony. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you. Thanks
Good.
For your show.
Absolutely. Thanks for calling.
Sure. So I've got two questions. I've got two of my three sons that I'm going to talk to you about. One just graduated college a month ago, and he's already got a job in Pocatello starting July 1st as a math teacher and worship leader at a church and then teaching at their school. And so he's got a contract coming. He's already got a email invitation to join them, and he's going to, and they're moving there in about 2 weeks. But as a fresh college graduate that has a job but no job history other than student teaching and things, is it possible for them to qualify for a home as first-time home buyers?
Hi, Tony. This is Michelle. Yes, he can. And actually, you can use education in lieu of job history to qualify. We just ask that the borrower provides a copy of their transcripts and diploma.
And really?
Yep.
Great.
Yep.
Well, that's exciting. Okay. And then the second question is, I have a 26-year-old son. He and his wife have just been in the process of cleaning up some derogatory credit, and they're just in the last couple months, and their credit score has gone up from about 580 to maybe 600. And they spoke with their credit union, who has a first-time homebuyer program, and said, yeah, you still aren't quite high enough to be able to get a loan. And I thought, well, credit unions are sometimes a little limited, although we love them, but sometimes they're limited on what they can provide. And I just wondered, this will be their first time buying a home, and they live in the home that they want to buy. They've been renting for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And the landlord is offering it to them. So are there other programs out there besides the first-time homebuyer type program that might work for someone that's credit score is right around 600? He's self-employed for about 5 years, doesn't show a lot of income on his tax returns, and his wife's been a CNA at St. Luke's for the last 3 months.
So, but prior to her 3 months, was she in school for that?
No, she's just been, she's been at home raising the kids.
Okay. So with respect to that, the most important issue there is they're going to have to show enough income to qualify for the debt.
I'm sorry, they're going to have to show what?
Their tax returns are going to have to show enough income to qualify.
Okay.
So that's the first thing I would look at. If there is enough stated income on their tax returns to qualify for the debt, then the answer to your question is yes. There are products through FHA that will go to a 580 credit score. Now, those products are FHA. They do not qualify for our Idaho state bond programs, and you would have to have either a gift or your own 3.5% down. But, yes, they could. If all stars aligned, yes, they could do it.
Okay, and they've got about $9,000 saved for a down payment, so they're in a good place there.
Yes.
The house is only about $185,000.
Yes. So as long as he's showing enough income to qualify for the property he's trying to purchase, then it sounds like with his self-employment history being 5 years, they should be okay.
So does it really come down to debt-to-income ratio? Is that what we're talking about?
It does. It absolutely does.
Okay. Okay, super. Well, thanks, guys. Have a great day, and I appreciate you taking the time to answer my questions.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Thank you, Tony. Hey, quick question, Michelle.
Yes.
Is it smart for people to buy a home with poor credit scores? I mean, should they wait if they don't have a lot of cash flow? Is it better to rent, or do people get, just because the market is so hot, do they get overly excited that they feel like they're going to miss out and not have an opportunity to buy, and they jump into something that maybe they're not quite ready for?
Well, there's different thoughts on that, in my opinion. Just because they have poor credit scores doesn't mean that they're not ready to buy a home, because those poor credit scores could be because of a medical situation. They could have collections from, you know, something that has happened to them in the past, a significant event that may not be occurring going forward. And these people have to pay rent either way, whether they pay their mortgage payment that we are going to make sure that they qualify for, or they pay rent, they have to have a place to live. So I think if they have a lot of credit card debt and derogatory credit that's brought their scores down because they've mismanaged, then that's one thing to look at.
Gotcha.
If they have poor scores for other reasons that were beyond their control, that's something else to consider.
Okay. So, Debbie, what does your clientele look like now? A lot of first-time home buyers, or not as many as people saying, my house is finally worth what it was before and I want to get out and move? What does it look like for you?
I would say that I don't have as many first-time home buyers right now as I usually do. But the listings I've had lately have attracted many first-time home buyers, so I know they're out there. So, it's just a real mix right now for me in the market, yeah.
Do you get a lot of people feeling that if they don't buy now, they're not going to get an opportunity to?
There is a little bit of that nervousness mm-hmm. out there of, are they, you know, especially first-time home buyers, because will they be priced out of this market soon, where their incomes just will never be enough to buy what our, entry price points are? So I do think there is some nervousness, and that's why they need to buy right now. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to buy right now. Right. So we need some inventory.
Right.
Yeah.
So our income levels, are they at a place where they can actually pay the way these housing prices are going up? Because it seems to me that the income in Idaho is not very high, and a lot of these homes seem to be getting priced very high. So is there going to come a point where we're going to go, we can't do this anymore? What does it look like? Or out-of-state buyers? What are you seeing, Michelle?
When I look at a borrower, we make sure that they qualify. Those are the new rules that have been put in place 7 or 8 years ago. So they're going to qualify. Whether the product is available for them, that's more of a Debbie question, because you're right, we are really low on inventory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, And as the prices continue to go up, there could be income levels in Idaho that don't support home ownership, which is a sad thing. Yeah, that is really a sad thing. And rates right now are still very affordable and great. So we'll see what happens there over the next year or two as those rates probably, don't you think, Michelle, will be going up?
You know, I would have thought that after the election, but I don't know anymore.
Yeah, because they really haven't moved much,
really.
Have they?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, that's true. Which is a good thing for the first-time homebuyers. So don't give up. There will be, there'll be some inventory. And if you have to move out of the parameters of Boise a little bit and edge over to Canyon County, you know, do so. Home ownership is awesome. And take advantage, of where you can afford to buy.
And, you know, that's a big city. We're getting to be a bigger city.
Yes.
Not everyone lives in downtown Seattle. Not everyone lives in downtown.
Right.
They go on out to the outskirts a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can speak from getting out of the center of the universe just here recently. It's kind of nice to have a little space around you.
It is.
It's a little quiet and peaceful.
True.
All right, we're going to take another break. When we come back, we will continue talking about real estate. Again, give us a call, 580-KIDO, 580-5436.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo, KITO.
Good morning and welcome to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone filling in for Dave Petzo. Give us a call, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. I've got my tongue tied there. We've got a group full of very, very knowledgeable folks here trying to give us a good insight on how to get started and get into the real estate market. So, Debbie, I have a question. This is one of the things that I've seen frequently is that everyone, when real estate is hot, seems to become a licensed real estate agent, and they want to be able to do it part-time or on the side. I know working with you on a lot of different times, you work 24/7. You answer phone calls and emails all hours of the day. I mean, not quite at midnight, but pretty close sometimes when people are freaking out. You help them and you're always available. How do you find someone that's as dedicated as you are to this job?
There are a lot of good real estate professionals in the Valley, and I think probably the best way is a referral system. And ask your friends and, you know, ask for maybe a little bit of the history on your agent and how many transactions. And, you know, you can go to the Idaho Real Estate Commission and even check licensed realtors' history on complaints or length of time on the job. But a lot of times just your friends might know just that right agent. And there are a lot of good ones in the Valley. So ask around.
Do you feel that it was, again, everybody getting into it part-time again, or is it not that heavy as it was back in 06-07 time period?
You know, there are a lot of new agents in the market right now, and it's a great occupation. It's a big responsibility, and I think some get in and find that they really can't or don't have the temperament to handle the stress that comes along with it. Everyone looks at real estate as fun, and it is fun, and looking at those beautiful homes is a total joy, but there's a whole lot more to come after that. So once you find that out, I think some do get back out rather quickly. And I do think part-time is really difficult, and I don't know how you could do part-time. And everyone has a sphere of people around them that maybe you're going to sell your aunt a house or you're going to sell your kids a house, and that makes you happy and you don't want to expand your business beyond that, which is fine. But if you really want to sell real estate and you build that referral network starts coming into you, you better be geared up and you better be ready. And yeah, it is 24/7, or get some backup, you know, where you could take a few days off, but someone needs to be on the phone. That's our obligation to our clients, is to be there when they need us. And there are so many timed issues that click along during the contract period that have deadlines, and you must meet those deadlines, and it's really critical to the transaction. So
someone like Erica, I'm going to use you here. She's new to Boise.
Right.
Where would she go? What would she do? How would she find someone? I mean, I know we can refer, obviously, and help her with that, but if she didn't have a good source yet, how would she go on? What would you suggest she do? What questions would you ask a realtor if she were to interview?
I would probably ask for work history. Yeah. Ask for work history and how long have you been doing this? And, you know, in our industry, we do have levels of production. And so you can ask. And I used to do a lot of relocation. And one of the hospitals, if you wanted in their referral system, you had to be a platinum agent in this town. And that's a huge number of production. So that isn't always fair because sometimes you get to that level too. And those agents maybe don't give you as much personal attention. So sometimes somebody on a little smaller level is a better idea. They might have more time for you. So I think someone with heart who will give you all they have in attention, I think that is the most critical factor, and they need to know the contract documents. Mm-hmm. So I still think the referral system is best, and asking around for sure.
So if there are new agents starting out there, how do you give them, you know, if you're saying to kind of go for someone that has more experience and mm-hmm. stuff, how do the new agents get into the business then? Or is it just those one-off situations where someone says, okay, I'll try using you?
And you know what? I think a new agent can come across with just as much professionalism as us old timers can if they really have done their homework and they understand the business. And so I would never shy away from one. And I also think, you know, a real estate agent who is not a real estate broker works mm-hmm. under a broker. And so you always have that network of your broker okay. in your back. Always, he's always got your back mm-hmm. and always have resources for knowledge. So my two kids are rather new in real estate, and they've been given many opportunities, and they've done excellent, and they've done really well. And a lot of new agents get a mentor in the business who will watch over.
All right, we got to take a break. That's the music, meaning they're going to cut us off from talking here shortly. So when we come back the next hour, we will continue talking about real estate. So give us your call, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone filling in for Dave Pezzo this morning. I am a CFP, worked with Dave for a little over 20 years now, so we've got a good deal of history, and he lets us fill in for him every once in a while when he's out of town. Tom was committed with other things this weekend, so it's me with a bunch of very, very experienced ladies in the real estate industry, and we're talking about financing, how to buy a property, how to get loans, how to qualify. Anything and everything to do with real estate today. So if you have questions, please call me at 580-KIDO or 580-5436. So when we were ending the last hour, we were talking about how to find a good real estate agent. And Debbie had some other thoughts because we were able to talk off the air. So please continue that discussion.
Okay, let's talk about when you find that real estate agent, what, as a consumer, does the agent owe you in responsibilities of taking care of your transaction? So there are two levels of representation that buyers can receive from a real estate professional. First is just as a customer. And if you're just a customer to the agent is required to perform all duties necessary to help you buy or sell your home, and to do so with honesty and good faith and with reasonable skill and care. We have to account for all your monies, and we have to disclose any adverse material facts to you through the transaction. And that would be the minimum, and that's required by law, that we owe our customers. And then if you choose to enter into a contract with that agent, whether it's a seller representation or a buyer representation contract, the agent would then owe you a higher duty of responsibilities, which then would include confidentiality of your all of the facts of your bargaining positions and We would negotiate only on your behalf on price and terms in contracts. So almost every buyer and seller I work with, I do become a buyer's rep or a seller's rep. And a seller's rep is a little bit different because that contract states a purchase price, and usually the seller is paying the real estate commission, and that contract is essential to getting the property onto the market through the multiple listing. But a buyer you could work with as just a customer. So just knowing that and knowing what's in that contract is really important. So your agent should explain to agency to you our simple blue brochure. And then if you're going to sign the contract, you can obligate yourself as a buyer to paying real estate commission, because there are like four boxes that can be checked on that document. And what I do with my buyers, I never obligate anyone to work with me if they don't want to work with me. So I have zero cancellation fees in my buyer broker contracts. And what I say is that I choose that we're going to find you a home in the multiple listing service, and I'll accept whatever the percentage of commission is that's being offered from the seller. Because if I put, let's say, I want to be paid 3%, 4%, 5%, whatever number it is, and I find a house for you and they're only offering 2%, and I mark that in that contract, you could be obligated to the difference of the seller's offer to pay and what's in that contract. So reading that paragraph and understanding that in the contract is really important. And I always allow you out of the contract. If I'm not doing my job for you, you shouldn't have to pay me.
So there's no, see, that's interesting to me. I didn't realize that they could actually do that. So that's very interesting.
Yes, you can do that. And we as agents all sort, there is, you know, guidelines and rules from your broker, what you need to do and not do. And I have a great broker, and he's super also understanding of the fact that, you know, we don't want to overcommit our consumers.
All right. Very good. Okay. We're going to go to the phones right now. We have a question on, good morning. Adding a new roof. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, what it is the house is about 17 years old. We're thinking about putting it on the market, and the roof is starting to show signs of some wear. It's just a three slat roof, whatever they call it. It's a flat roof. So we're considering maybe putting architectural shingles over the top.
Hi, this is Debbie. Hey, and that is a great question. I hit roof problems all the time. So the fact that you're being proactive and having a look at that roof is really important. First of all, if you put it on the market and the roof is questionable, the first step that happens is that home inspection, and probably you're going to get called on it at that point. And even if you do not, once the appraiser gets to the house, you could get called on it at that point. So, and FHA usually has a higher level of requirements for appraisals on roofs. So getting that replaced is probably a really good idea, and it does add value to your home.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think that's awesome if you're being proactive about that.
Do you think you can get it all back?
It would kind of depend. In this market, probably.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a good seller market. So yeah, that improvement to your home is possibly worth, depending upon your location and the other factors that would need to be looked at, but you very possibly could. Yeah.
Alrighty.
All right. Have a good day. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim?
Yeah, I just wanted to make another comment.
Okay.
Having to do with actually PR, I guess, you know. I bought my house in 1985.
Okay.
And my agent was a guy named Dennis Farley, 3321. And he was really nice. I was new to Boise. I had no idea about home ownership or about insulation. And he told me about insulation, and he actually came out and helped me blow some foam in the attic. He might have charged me like $100 or whatever, but I mean, I still remember that, and it was just a really good outside the lines of responsibility thing he did.
You know, Jim, I have to agree with you. I think any realtor, when I walk through a house, if I see something, I absolutely will say, hey, you guys, you know, has is that broken? Or my favorite question to people selling their homes right now since our winter was, have you looked in your crawl space lately? So that's good for that agent, yes. I mean, if they know there are things they could do to advise or help you a bit with getting that property in good condition, that is all good news.
Well, I knew when I bought the place, it was a fixer-upper. And, of course, I have never been that. That's not my character, you know.
Right.
And I had all sorts of grandiose ideas, you know. My idea is to drink a beer and listen to music with headphones, you know, not house, or, you know. And I tried a garden once, and that failed. But the thing was.
So why'd you buy a fixer-upper? I'm just curious if you hate that kind of.
I told him I had two requirements. I wanted a large bedroom, and I wanted a fireplace. Now, my fantasy was to be sitting by the fireplace sipping wine with a beautiful girl. Interestingly enough, that never came about.
Darn. he failed then.
Well,
he didn't get the girl.
The other one he showed me actually was on Roosevelt across from the cemetery. And I could think of better things every morning than to walk out and see a bunch of gravestones.
Hey, that's a really quiet neighbor, though.
But
yeah.
True. But this house, I liked it. But it's not that he just recommended it. I mean, he helped me do it.
Yeah.
I mean, I still remember his name and still have good feelings about that.
Yeah. That's great. That's great.
That anyway, is good.
Yep. Thanks much.
Thank you. All right. Wonderful. So, again, give us calls. This is great. We love to have the interaction. It's fun to talk and hear different views. So please call at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. So let's get back to a couple other questions that I have. One of them I always, and again, that's why you two are here. So please, please tell me what you would do. It seems like since homes are so hard to find existing, why aren't more people building, or are they?
New construction numbers are up right now, but there isn't enough. So new subdivisions are popping up all over. I think when the market really collapsed, a lot of builders and a lot of our tradesmen who are the laborers that we need to build those homes went different directions. So I believe that, and of course there's a lot of new energy codes, which is a good reason to buy a new home. It's just for that fact. But it's coming back on. We need more, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the new construction can make up the inventory shortages from the resale market. So hopefully maybe even by next year. But I hear of labor shortages all the time, which I think that's part of why it's taking so long. And regulations are tougher to meet. So it is taking longer to build a new home.
Mm-hmm.
So even though those homes are sitting out there in the inventory, they're not livable at this point. There's under construction. There's to-be-built everywhere in MLS. And, of course, that's not a tangible thing that you can sell right now, you know, to let someone occupy it at least right now.
Right. So tell me about construction loans. I've always been warned, Michelle, that those are scary. You don't want to do construction loans. I know nothing about them because I've never built a home. How do they work?
Typically we have a what's called a one-time close construction loan. So that is for the consumer, or the builder can carry the money. If you do a one-time close construction loan, essentially you're going to close the loan up front. And as the builder submits draws and through the progress of construction, we draw out on your draw out on your construction loan. They're expensive.
Yeah.
That is the one drawback. But the builder's going to pass it on as well. So you just really have to run the math on those. And it also depends on the builder who's building for you. He may want you to get your own money versus carrying it on his books.
How do mortgage loan officers get paid? Real estate, we understand it. It's built in. It's there. Explain origination fees and points and how you get paid. How does that work?
Okay, well, back in the day, we were paid based on rate. That's no longer the case. So each company will pay their loan officers differently, and it's based on your gross production. So you can have commissions between, you know, depending on if you work at a credit union, you may have a 65 basis point commissions on your gross loans closed. All the way up to other places that pay 140, 150 basis points. So not paid on rate, not paid based on points and fees, literally paid based on our production. and the contract that we have with our mortgage department or our mortgage companies.
Okay, so the loan origination fees, though, are how the company makes their money, and how they choose to pay you is different.
That is correct.
Okay, so it's not transaction-based that way.
That's correct.
Okay.
And really, origination fees and discount points are the cost of obtaining rate. Okay. So you don't have to pay an origination fee, but the rate will be a little bit higher.
Kind of like the 10-year no-cost
loan. Exactly, that we do, yes.
Yeah, exactly, yep. So we think that's when people are needing to refinance, there's some programs out there that are pretty cool because everyone hesitates to refinance their loans because they don't want to pay closing costs. It's a big deal, right? I don't want to add more to my loan.
Right.
Well, there's products out there right now that you don't have to, but if you compare the rates, they're just a little bit higher. So, of course, the banks are making money or they wouldn't be in business. It's not a charity thing, but it's a nice way for very, very low cost to get into a refinance without closing costs.
Right. And when we say that the rate's a little bit higher, we're talking somewhere between an eighth and a quarter higher. Yeah. You don't have the fees. And then you still have, in most cases, you can write off the interest.
Yeah. And if we're only going to be in the house for a couple of years, why would we do that? Well, I even think that's a more important reason because you can put so much. It's almost like a forced savings account, right?
Yep, exactly.
Because you're building that up. It all goes to principal.
Exactly.
And none of it really goes to interest.
That is correct.
Yep. So it's quite I think it's a great deal. People have to look at it and try to figure it out. Something that I had never heard of before, someone from out of state brings in Erica. She asked a question on recasting, and I'd never mm-hmm. heard that before.
Mm-hmm. So you can recast. A lot of times the lender requires a minimum principal reduction in order to recast.
And that's what recasting really is, right? You're redoing it over a period. Explain what that term means.
Okay, so recasting is like a reamortization of the loan. So most lenders require a minimum of $10,000 down, put it down on the principal, and then they'll recast that payment.
Okay, is that common?
Not necessarily, but you will find people that do it. And a lot of times this is where I see it the most. Let's say you can qualify for two homes. You don't have a lot of liquidity to put down on your new home. You're waiting till your old home sells. And when it does sell, you're going to come into $100,000. And that's when you're going to, maybe you put it down on your new loan or you come into an inheritance.
Gotcha.
So it's not very common, but it's available to you.
Okay. Do most lenders offer it?
They do. Most lenders, if they're servicing, do. If you've gone to a lender, you need to go to your servicing company, not your lender.
Okay.
So, Michelle, if you're doing that and you're re-amortizing the payment, but you're not touching the interest rate or the term of that mortgage, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, that was very interesting. I'd never really
Sure I've really ever heard that term before either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, again, please give us your calls. Phone number is 580-KIDO, 580-5436.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo, KITO.
Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone filling in for Dave Petzo this morning. Joining me today are Debbie Wickham. She is a realtor with Boise Premier Real Estate. Michelle Oliver, who is a senior loan officer with Finance of America Mortgage. And Erica, our latest CFP in our office. We are talking about all things real estate today. So if you have questions, please call us at 580-KIDO, 580-5436. And Erica, I know you had a couple questions, so please.
Yeah. So Debbie, being new to the Boise area, I'm just curious, where are the hot areas to look? Where should we be looking to buy in the next year and a half? Are there certain neighborhoods that are more up and coming? Are there ones that are just starting to grow? Where should we start to look?
Okay, I think selecting your neighborhood is probably one of the most important things that you will do. So it is very important. But if you ask me exactly where to take you to live, I need you to give me information on crossroads, easy commute, parks in my neighborhood. I want to be close to the river. And then there are questions you might ask me that I can't help you with.
Mm-hmm.
I want to live near my church. Are there kids in the neighborhood? So we have fair housing rules that tie our hands a bit, depending upon the parameters that you mm-hmm. want to set. So once again, our job is to guide you and help you. So I might say, what would you like in a home? Do you want a new home? Do you want to live in a neighborhood full of big, beautiful trees? Well, that's not new construction. Right. So you can help me by, and of course, we first established that loan approval letter, right?
Right.
We've all got that. And then we start talking about the size of your home, the price of your home. Maybe you're from a part of the country where a big three-car garage was an impossible thing to have, and here that's an easy thing to have. So, you know, you set those, the wish list with mm-hmm. me, and as long as we don't cross any fair housing boundaries, then I can set you up. And we have a feature I love in our MLS. It's called Client Connect.
Okay.
And I literally can input exact data of what you want, and my system will auto-notify you and me when a new house pops on the market. So, that's a great feature, and I can also use a mapping tool in that program where I can draw a circle mm-hmm. around some neighborhoods where it will, any house that pops up in those neighborhoods, once you've driven around and you've said, oh my gosh, I love Hickories. I want to live in the Hickories. You know, I can totally just zoom in on that neighborhood for you. So it's a little bit of a process to get to that neighborhood. And it reminds me of a little funny story. My sister and I were out looking in Middleton for her a home, and farm odors is not a protected class. So I went knocking on a few doors for her, asking the neighbors, you know, does it stink out here? So, you know, we can do the research that you ask us to do, depending upon what's important to you.
Gotcha.
As long as we don't cross those fair housing guidelines.
Yeah, the fair housing thing got me, I have to tell you. When she was saying what we cannot and can ask, mm-hmm. I had no idea you couldn't say, is this a neighborhood full of kids?
Yes. No.
You know, I thought that's very interesting.
Yeah. So but if you want a neighborhood full of kids, I might drive around a neighborhood with you for a while and let you look around.
There's any kids running around.
What you see, or really knocking on a door of a neighbor's house is a great idea, I think.
You know, It's funny that we actually had someone come knock on our door the other day and ask us about the neighborhood. And he, very nice man, but we were kind of surprised. He's like, hey, can I come in and look at your backyard? sure. So very nice, but it did catch us off guard a little bit. And we were both going, why are you here? What do you want to know? But it was very interesting.
Yeah, I think walking the neighborhood is great. Talking to the neighbors, yeah.
Absolutely. All right, Jim?
Yes.
Hey there. How are you today?
Good. How are you doing?
Good.
I like your show.
Oh, thank you very much.
I've got a few quick questions for
you.
Okay. What is the length of a typical listing agreement?
I think in this market, I would do a three-month listing. If the market's a little tougher or if you're in a higher price point, I like at least a minimum of a six-month listing contract.
Mm-hmm.
And on the listing end, you know, as agents, we have to put out some expenses to get your properly photographed and signs and open houses or advertising, depending upon, you know, whatever you and the agent agree upon.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know agents who require a year contract.
Whoa.
So that, once again, is negotiable. Everything
right.
in our business is negotiable.
Okay.
So, but I think a 3 to 6 month is a fair.
Okay. And then on the listing agreements, again, one of the panel members mentioned that if the person listing is unhappy, she will cancel the agreement without penalty. Is that typical, or does that vary all over the map?
Varies all over the map.
Okay.
Yeah, and then on the listing side, see, there's two sides. A buyer is a little bit different on the contract that's signed between the agent and the buyer.
Mm-hmm.
On the selling side, because the usually with your buyer, your initial input into the transaction is time. On a
mm-hmm.
listing, it's you are spending money and you have expenses
mm-hmm.
to market the property. So occasionally on my listing contracts, I will put the cost of my professional photos, especially if they're expensive, which some of them are,
mm-hmm.
that if you do want to cancel with me, say after 30 days, you don't even want to sell the house anymore, that you would reimburse me for my photos.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
but
is that something that the agent normally pays for? Does the agent's company pay for those?
No, the agent pays. We're all independent contractors.
Got it.
And everything we spend in expenses does come out of our pocket. And as independent contractors, we do not get paid unless we close a transaction.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then what is a bridge loan?
Oh, I'll let Michelle hop in on that one. Hold on 1 second, please.
Okay.
A bridge loan is what he's wondering. What is a bridge loan, Michelle?
Let's see. A bridge loan will be financing between the sale of your home and the purchase of your new home, typically what a bridge loan is used for.
So you're carrying both basically at the same time, but what it does is it allows you to pull the equity out and use it for the new home?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then last question I had, in the last hour, a man called in and said he had a son who was a new graduate and basically had no credit history, and he was told if you show your transcripts and your degree, that would, you know, help qualify you for it. Now, you have to have a decent GPA to even earn a degree. I'm curious, if you have the degree, why do you have to show the transcripts also?
Oh, that's a great question. But the reason that we do that is because mm-hmm. of people who manufacture documents.
Uh-huh.
So we want to make sure that you have the degree. And
right.
then the transcripts show the day you started school, the day you graduate school.
Mm-hmm.
So it has really nothing to do with GPA. It's about providing all of the required documents to meet the requirement.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And with people who can, you know, manufacture phony documents and stuff, I understand what you're saying, basically, because this digital world really lets you make a bunch of phony stuff. And so it's, I know when I was working in industry, we actually had to get the degree and the transcript from the school. We wouldn't accept it from the applicant.
You know, you're right, and we do too. We don't have to get it from the school, but we do want the transcripts to be official.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, but that's a really great question, and it's a great way for graduates to get into a home is mm-hmm. to allow them to use their education in lieu of work history.
Right. Okay.
Which we typically require 2 years.
Okay. Hey, thank you all. It's been very helpful.
Thank you, Jim.
My pleasure.
Hey, take care.
Mm-hmm. You too. Bye-bye. All right, we're going to take another break, and when we come back, we're going to say, now we found our dream home. What happens next? So give us a call, 580-KIDO, 580-5436.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo, KIDO.
Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone filling in for Dave Pezzo today. Phone number is 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Thank you for all your calls. It's making this a very, very fun show. I think we've had a ton. We're definitely setting the bar high today. So keep them coming. We like to brag about how many calls we have. We are slightly competitive at our office. So thank you for calling. Now, I just found my dream home. What comes next? How do we do this? Do we contact the lender and say, hey, we're ready to move on so we can start setting closing dates? How do we make an offer? How does all that work?
All right. Well, the paperwork begins. Okay. And hopefully by this time that you found your dream home that you are already in a buyer broker agreement with your agent, so you know where you stand on that. The purchase and sell agreement is written by the buyer and the buyer's agent, and you establish earnest money. You establish in the contract what your loan terms will be.
Let me ask a question. How do you determine earnest money?
Earnest money, it's pretty random. A lot of times if you buy new construction, they want 1%. If I'm selling a home around $200,000, I think $1,500. And once in a while, you have a first-time home buyer who perhaps only has $1,000. And if the seller will accept that, then that's fine, because it can be $500, and it used to could be your boat, you know, if you could get the broker to hold that for you.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's usually a little bit negotiable.
Okay.
And if I get an offer sometimes with $500 and I'm uncomfortable with that, which I usually am, we'll counter back and say, you know, you need to up that earnest money. And sometimes they have a loan program that maybe they don't have a big down payment and maybe they're asking the seller to pay closing costs. So their cash inlay is low, and they're trying to, you know, not put up too much. So once you get your terms of your contract all established, and a closing date is also then very important to establish a date. And the first thing I do with the signed contract is get it to the lender so that they know what you've done. And if any red flags come up there, or if they're, you know, you need to allow it minimum 30 days to 40 days. Is that pretty much right, Michelle, in your world of finance, you can get them closed by then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We really run it about 3 weeks right now. And everybody really does. But the preferred is 30 to 40 days.
Right. Okay. So once the offer's written, you also are required to, as a seller, provide a seller property disclosure, which is very important to the transaction, and the buyer needs to review that. And if there are homeowners' dues and CC&Rs to a neighborhood, all those things need to be provided to the buyer. And in this fast-moving market, the home inspection period, which is the first thing that clicks after you're under contract, if you allow at least 8 days, 7 to 8 days, your buyer has a full right to investigate everything they need to know. And perhaps you hit so fast you don't even know if it's in the right school district.
Right.
So you are scrambling to make sure that the house meets all of your needs and requirements. And if it does not, that you are entitled to get out of the contract at that time.
So you can actually, even though you put earnest money down, you have a lot of ways to get out, or not so much?
You know what? There's a lot of ways out.
Yeah. I always thought that you were pretty done.
If you read the contract in detail, which I did last night just to count how many places. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I have 6 statements within the RE21 purchase and sell agreement where a buyer could get a refund of their earnest money and back out. Some of these things you cannot initiate or trigger, but if there was even a cloud on title and the seller can't make the property marketable, clear title, there's another out. You never hardly hear about that because that doesn't happen very often. But occasionally, once the title insurance is written and you see what you have, maybe Mr. Seller's ex-wife just leaned his house or something strange.
Yep.
So anyway, yeah, that's kind of the process, and there's many steps to go through. And the two hot points that usually can shake the contract is that home inspection, depending upon if there are surprises that are you cannot work them out, and the other would be the appraisal. And believe me, in this market of overbidding prices, we're hitting appraisal problems once in a while. Yeah.
Yeah. Those inspections, the way you kind of have to look at inspections, I think people, I can attest, you get a little nervous when people are coming through your house checking everything. And what they find, oh, we need a new light bulb. Really?
Yeah.
Okay. But the little things, which is great if they only find little things, but what if something major comes up? I mean, you can get out of it based on
Absolutely.
Comfort, even if it's fixable, correct?
Yes. And you don't even have to ask the seller to fix anything. The RE, it's called an RE10 inspection notice. It's not an addendum. It's a notice to the seller that you've done your inspection. There are 3 check marks on the contract, and you can choose to move forward without asking for anything. That's item 1.
Mm-hmm.
And then in part 2, which is the part we use most of the time, you can ask for a price reduction and take it as is. I'll fix those things myself, I'd rather.
Mm-hmm.
You can ask the seller for an itemized list of repairs, and then you'll remove your contingency. And then the paragraph in the contract, which is very detailed, it says the seller has to do the work in a workmanlike manner, and you have a right to reinspect the items that you requested. So anyway, so there's a way to detail exactly what repairs you want done. Mm-hmm. And then there's another checkbox on that document. And it's terminate the contract without reason. Without an explanation.
Okay.
Needed.
So you can just find something that you go, I'm not at all comfortable, I'm out.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's the RE10. And let me caution you, as I know builders, they are overwriting our contracts with their own addendums, and they are making earnest money non-refundable for any reason.
Oh, wow.
Up front.
Wow.
So just be aware of that.
What you're signing.
And what they're saying to, what they're saying, giving back to you in return for that is they're going to work all those details out with you, and they're going to warrant your house, and they're going to make sure it's in good condition.
Sure.
But if you do inspections on new construction, it can be a whole different situation. So this is speaking to resale.
Gotcha. Okay. So another reason to find a very competent real estate professional to work with.
Absolutely.
Because if you don't read contracts, and a lot of times in this world that we're in, we always say that. How do you read all of this and even understand the terminology?
Yes.
You're in a different language than we talk.
Right.
So you have to have someone that can actually translate this to you or read what you're signing before you sign it if someone's not explaining it well. All right, we're going to take another break. When we come back, we're going to talk about how we finalize the closing and what a title company is and what they do for us, as well as how to finish the loans up. Give us a call, 580-KIDO, 580-5436.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo, KIDO.
Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone filling in for Dave Petzo this morning. I'm going to thank my guests right now because I know we're going to push to the end of this segment an hour and we'll be done before we know it. So thank you all for coming in, Erica and Michelle and Debbie. It's been great. I think we've gotten a ton of information. So thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to know this. What does a title company do? So there's pretty much three professionals that you work with in a real estate transaction: the realtor, a mortgage officer, and a title company. What does the title company do?
All right. The title company does two aspects of the transaction. And when a contract is accepted, I always send it over to the escrow officer. And she's going to be the escrow is a third disinterested party, only meaning they have no sides in the deal at all. They're there to facilitate documents and neutrally do so. So then there's the title department, and escrow will send a copy of the contract and order what we call a preliminary title report. What that is a search. If you buy a car, they check the title to your car. Well, you're purchasing a home, so they need to do full research backward in time to make sure that property taxes are paid, irrigation liens might be on the title report, if there's a mortgage on there to be paid off. And a lot of times on your title report will be all kinds of Idaho power easements, irrigation easements. Maybe it's a rural property and you and the neighbor have a shared road agreement, or any documents that would be recorded against the property need to be on this report. And the lender is going to care about that a lot because they want to make sure their mortgage is in the first lien position, only subject to the property taxes. So the escrow officer is going to clean up any details and get payoffs for mortgages so that title can be transferred to the new buyer and the new mortgage can be put on the property. And I say mortgage, but we use deeds of trust. Can be recorded on the property. So the escrow officer is actually the person who will receive the loan documents. So when Michelle has her loan documents ready, she will send them over to the escrow officer, and the escrow officer and the loan officer will go over the closing statements and work up the transaction to the final closing numbers.
Perfect. All right, we're going to go to the phones here because Diane has a question on the bidding process, which I'm assuming with the way that things are happening, how that works. Is that correct, Diane?
That is correct.
Hi
so
there.
If I find a house I really like, can I end up getting into a bidding war and the appraisal comes back less than the amount that I've bid and I really still want this house, am I allowed to pay the difference? And how does that work with the lender?
Okay. And, you know, Michelle can't hear the question right now, but let me answer part of that, and then I'll clarify with her here in just a moment.
Okay.
And I just did have this happen. So we had a conventional buyer who overbid the house, and it's quite possible because appraisers use current comps that we may be a bit over what those comps are going to show. So in our contract, we have a provision that the buyer will pay the difference between the purchase price and the appraisal in cash at closing. Okay, and the only reason that I would wonder if you cannot do that is on an FHA buyer. Can the FHA buyer, Michelle, pay the difference if the appraisal is short?
If, as long as they can document that they have the funds to close.
Okay, so that is, she is saying that it would not matter which type of financing. Any purchaser who does want to go ahead and purchase a property that did not appraise, but you're willing to pay the price, can do so in cash at closing. And you can put that in your contract. Have your realtor put that provision right in the contract. And you can even do an escalation clause, perhaps if it's totally a crazy market and you've maybe the house is on the market for $199 and you want to offer $210, but you're willing to go up to $215,000, your escalation clause would state that you will pay $1,000 over the highest offer. Net figures need to match. So you have to look at, you know, if the appraisal's been marked for the seller. So you need to have your agent, the two agents need to make sure what the net difference is. And then you can offer up to $1,000 over the highest price, not to exceed $215,000. And if you're willing to pay the difference of the appraisal and the purchase price, you can do so for sure.
Gotcha. And in this market, with the way things are going, do you ever tell, or not tell your clients, but advise your clients, if you really want this house, you know, do the best you can to put the best price forward, even
yes.
though it might be over what the appraisal comes in at? Is that part of your fiduciary duty?
Our duty is never to dictate a price, but here's what I do. If you have the time and with the sense of the market being crazy like it is, you always look at comps. You look at the comps in the neighborhood and you say, hey, another house just like this just sold last month for this price. This is a smart price. And you're showing the house, you're with me and we're looking at the house. And there are eight other realtors in there with their buyers. What does that tell you? So, yeah, I would advise you to give the best, strongest offer you're comfortable with.
Gotcha. And realizing that you may have to pay the difference.
Absolutely.
Plus, it, with a conventional loan, you may have to pay your 20% down plus the difference.
Absolutely. That's correct. Yes.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. All right, I do have a question. It's funny how quick this goes, isn't it?
I know.
All right, so Michelle, I need to ask you something that comes up because all we're talking about here is getting into homes with not a lot down. Not all we're talking, but a lot of that, right? First-time home buyers without a lot of money. Explain mortgage insurance.
Okay.
How do you not get it? Don't have to pay it, and how can you remove it?
Okay, that's a great question. So mortgage insurance is applied to the borrower and the loan anytime a borrower does not have 20% down. So let's say you only have 3%, 5%, 10%. You're going to have mortgage insurance, and that mortgage insurance is going to be priced based on credit score and loan to value. Mortgage insurance can be removed if you do one of two things. Let's say you have a principal reduction, you can ask that it be removed. The lender may have their own criteria, but it can be done. The lender is required to remove it once you reach 78% loan to value.
Is it automatic? Do they notify? How do they get notified? From assessments or?
How does the lender get notified?
Yeah. Is it based on the original purchase price?
It is.
Okay.
It is, yes.
And so it removes automatically based on that original price.
Right, at 78%.
Good.
But you can ask ahead of time. Let's say your property has, you know, the value's there and you know it. You can reach out to who's ever servicing your loan and ask what their criteria is.
Okay. And they may want you to pay for a new appraisal.
That's correct.
Yeah. Which makes sense. Protect
yep.
the lender. Okay.
Yep.
Very good. Let's talk a few more things about now that we're done. I want to know why you pick certain closing dates. I know part of it is because of contingency sales or whatever. But what if it's a clean deal? Erica found her house. She's ready to go. She has the down payment. Why does she have to wait a certain period of time? Is it to get through all the title searching as well as the underwriting? What is the criteria to pick a closing date?
Well, there's There's several reasons. The loan process alone is going to take at a minimum of 3 weeks. Verifying employment, verifying your funds to close, getting the appraisal in and done, and then finally having an underwriter look at my work and saying, yep, these people meet the criteria for the loan that you applied for. Interest is going to be calculated from the day you close through the first day of the following month. So a lot of people want to close at the end of the month because it helps them with their cash at closing. Either way, though, you have to pay it, whether you close at the first of the month or at the end of the month.
It's just out of pocket if you wait.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay, very good. So what else do we need to know, ladies?
Well, another thought, too, to follow up on what Michelle said there on the time frame it takes. Are you finding that realtors are telling you not to order the appraisal till the home inspection is done? I do that because that's usually the one bump in the road that's most likely to happen if you're going to have a problem. So if we're holding you up and not letting you order that appraisal, that can add a little extra time too. Okay. But it's the safest thing to do, not to incur the cost of an appraisal to either the buyer or seller, whoever's paying it, in case.
That is true.
Yeah, right. So that's another little time element that figures in.
What about getting an inspection? I always thought that if you're selling your home, get an inspection before you list it so you know all the deal.
That's a great idea, but the buyer is still probably going to do it, and so it's just another cost to you. So depending upon the condition of your home, it's really a good idea. It's just another expense.
Yeah.
It is a good idea.
But you go into it with eyes wide open.
Yeah. And then you would know. And truthfully, you could do your repairs, provide your receipts and your report. Mm-hmm. And that might satisfy the buyer.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. So tell me some more. What else? What's hot out there right now? Do you have houses that you've got listed that you're trying to? Are you going crazy?
It's pretty crazy. I'm on my way to Wilder to list a gorgeous 5-acre on the river piece of land you can build your dream home on.
Awesome. And how about you? Are you? And I know you made a recent transition to a new place. What is that like?
It's wonderful. The technology is wonderful. I have an exceptional team of an assistant who does a great job marketing. We have a great loan officer's concierge desk that does a lot of things for our real estate partners and our borrowers.
Uh-huh.
So it's been great. It's a good move for me.
Good. Good.
Yeah.
So you both are going to be doing this forever? Is that the plan?
Well, it's been 27 years for me as it is. I don't know that I know anything
forever.
Else.
But that's what's fun about it, right? You really get to know relationships, and I think that's super important.
Yes.
And if you can make it through that big downturn we just went through and still be here, you're here to be here.
And I remember in 2008 saying, I don't want to do short sales. Well, if you didn't do short sales, you didn't sell real estate.
Yeah.
So, and we're so lucky.
I'm glad that's over.
And we're so lucky in the United States that we get to be homeowners. You know, in other countries, only the wealthy own homes.
I know.
So we're so lucky.
It is. Thank you. Thank you very much
it's
for all your expertise.
You.
It's been great. So have a wonderful weekend. And again, we're Money Matters.